Hello, I'm Linoch Nudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at how the African diaspora is contributing to improving Africa's health system. But first, the World Health Organization says global HIV, viral hepatitis, epidemics, and sexually transmitted infections, or STIs, continue to pose significant public health challenges. WHO new report titled Implementing the Global Health Sector Strategies on HIV, Viral Hepatitis, and Sexual Transmitted Infections 2022 to 2030 reveals that 2.5 million people lose their lives each year from the diseases. The new data show that STIs are increasing in many regions. In 2022, WHO member states set out an ambitious target of reducing the annual number of adult syphilis infections by tenfold by 2030, from 7.1 million to 0.71 million. Yet, new syphilis cases among adults aged 15 to 49 years increased by over 1 million in 2022, reaching 8 million. The highest increases occurred in the region for the Americas and the Africas. Turning now to Africa's health system, the State of Universal Health Coverage in Africa 2021 report reveals that less than half of the African population has access to the healthcare it needs. Africa bears more than 24% of the global burden of disease, but has access to only 3% of health workers. Observers say the contributions of the African diaspora, including those in the medical field, are playing a vital role in improving healthcare access and quality on the continent. Many patients travel abroad to seek advanced medical care. A new special surgery institute has opened in Ghana to address this need. The state-of-the-art institute will draw from world-renowned medical professionals to help deliver special surgeries and train local doctors. It is an initiative by a U.S.-based Ghanaian surgeon. Senanu Todd reports from Accra, Ghana.
In a theater in Accra, medical experts from the U.S. perform a special cancer removal surgery for a kidney patient. The procedure is a minimally invasive surgery that uses cameras and robots. They say it is the very first time it is being done in Ghana. It is called laparoscopy.
That one could have been done here. They already referred the guy outside. So he already had his visa and everything. And then someone told him about this place.
This place is the West African Institute for Special Surgery, or WISE. It opened in Accra in March to cater to specialty surgery needs in West Africa and beyond.
We provide the highest level of specialty surgery. So if you pick in a specialty, plastic surgery, for example, there is just general plastic surgery, micro transplant of tissues. You lose a finger, we put it back, make an ear, make a nose, make a face.
Dr. Kofi Buahene, a native of Ghana, is a head and neck surgeon, facial plastic and reconstructive surgeon at Johns Hopkins Hospital in the U.S. Since 2004, he has been running outreaches across the world to help patients who cannot afford quality healthcare in their countries. The program is known as the Foundation for Specialty Surgery, or FSS. Dr. Buahene, on one of such outreach missions in Ghana, was faced with a case of a brain tumor, but the local facilities were not well equipped to handle it.
I do those surgeries in the U.S. It takes me 2 hours to do it, and the person is cured. That child was presented to me, died. I actually tried to get her to the U.S. so I could do the surgery. She couldn't get a visa to leave. She died.
According to Ghana's Center for Democratic Development, West African countries spend over $1 billion annually on health tourism for specialized medical treatments. Usually, it is senior government officials or wealthy individuals who can afford to travel abroad for treatment. For those who cannot, Dr. Buahene says they are at the mercy of ill-equipped local health facilities.
People from all over the world will come and see me in the U.S. I'm able to, 2 hours, change their lives. I take a plane, it's a situation, that person may lose their eyesight or may lose their life. That doesn't sit well with me.
For this reason, Dr. Buahene and the FSS move to build the West African Institute for Special Surgery. The center will draw from globally trained health professionals to cure patients in Ghana.
In neurosurgery, in plastic surgery, in head and neck surgery, in ear surgery, in urology, the highest level of specialists are all congregating here.
Medical professionals from Ghana and across Africa can train and practice with these global experts and equipment.
Here I get to see robotic surgery. Yes, it's going to be the first in the country. So I get to see that. And that's awesome. That's pretty cool, you know, using robots to, you know, fix things. So, yeah.
With the state-of-the-art equipment and world-renowned medical experts, WISE says they hope to become the medical tourism destination in Africa and also provide free specialty healthcare services to persons who cannot afford them. Sena Lutod, VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
We asked the listeners the following question. How would you assess the access and quality of healthcare services in your region, and what specific improvements could be made to improve the healthcare system in your community? Here are some reactions from Cameroon.
If I have to evaluate the access to these services, it is not high. It's not high because sometimes we notice that as citizens, they don't have enough money to afford some services in the hospital. And there are some people that may not understand them or may abandon them like that. Meanwhile, we have to be on their side too and understand so as to take care, ameliorate, see things that has to be changed for people to be informed. Equally, we must have agents that communicate with the citizens for them to be aware of the services, of the price that have been lowered and the price that are increasing.
There is access because you can have a hospital nearby, but to assess the quality. And the second thing is that when you enter the hospital, there are some of them look at money. They look at you before they start talking to you. They say, no, what is the person sick or what is the person having? Before they start talking about that, they ask they should pay first of all, pay the consultation. You have to pay for consultation first before any person look at you.
We should respect the human being. It depends. It does not depend in levels because there are sometimes when you are coming in some hospital, they are seeing if you have money or not, and they neglect you. I want that those people should take everybody equally, and I hope that taking everybody equally, we change the mind of people that are coming through them
professionally. As from the moment we friendly welcome our patients for the takeover till the moment of recovery, that is taking care of each patient in an individual, our patients, after the recovery moment, what opinion do they have concerning the way we took them, and equally the personnel, that is to add the effective of the personnel.
There are some hospitals that they were built since, and it's only still functioning till now. I don't know if there's a problem here, they don't know there is maintenance. It's something I've seen that it's lacking in our country.
From medical missions to building hospitals and providing training, the collective efforts of diaspora-led initiatives remains an essential pillar in improving Africa's healthcare. For more on the subject, I spoke with Dr. Frank Menja, a diagnostic radiology at Emory Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia, and president of RoadToIR.org, an organization that provides a radiology training in East Africa.
For some years now, we have been involved in actually training programs, setting up training programs, because there is a very huge lack of radiologists across the continent. Specifically, many countries in sub-Saharan Africa have one radiologist for a population of about 1 million people. That is the average number across the 54 countries in Africa. So to close that gap, we've been working very hard in East Africa to establish training programs, specifically in radiology, because you can't buy radiologists. You have to train your own radiologists. And basically, if you don't have our own training programs, that is really where the problem begins.
When we talk about the health system, of course, the workforce is critical. And that's where you're coming with the training of radiologists in East Africa. Tell us about what it takes to be able to implement such a program.
Yes, so it takes a village. There are many, many people actually involved in our training program. Specifically, I'm talking about the Road to IR initiative. And this began in 2017, 2018, when we were invited to Tanzania to help establish an interventional radiology service at the National Hospital. And at that time, the National Hospital had good equipment. We had a good CT scan. We had a good ultrasound. Obviously, no shortage of patients. And also had a lot of eager residents, meaning trainees, who were willing to learn the skill. The only thing we do not have were actually skilled practitioners. So given our networks in the United States, we organized those teams to go on a regular basis to provide that training in Tanzania specifically. So we established a curriculum at the university in Dar es Salaam, Muhimbili University, and that works with the Muhimbili National Hospital. And so between those two, we have a curriculum and we have a good network of physicians who go on a regular basis. And up to now, we've been able to graduate 13 interventional radiology specialists who are working in Tanzania, Rwanda, and Nigeria.
Why is radiology an important aspect of the big picture of medicine when we talk about improving health system? Radiology seems to be a field that we don't hear a lot about.
Absolutely. So in modern medicine, as a matter of fact, I would say any hospital you go to in the United States, it will be impossible for you to not be touched by radiology, whether it's an X-ray, whether it's an ultrasound, whether it's a CT scan, whether it's an MRI scan. And essentially, this is modern medical imaging. And previously, many physicians will palpate you and feel your body to kind of like, you know, try to determine what's happening inside your body. But now with the new technologies, we're able to see inside the body and actually see and be able to diagnose. And that is really what the radiologist does. We interpret those medical images to see what's happening. Most people will probably encounter this during pregnancy when they go and see their baby. And so basically, that is probably the easiest way to kind of explain it. Or if you have a fracture, many people have a sense of like they'll get an X-ray to see whether their bone is fractured. But again, as we are having more and more serious diseases, for example, cancer, for example, stroke, and so forth, these powerful technologies of CT scan and MRI are very important in helping diagnose. And just one further point I want to make is that many governments are purchasing the machines. Right, so they're purchasing the CT scan, they're purchasing the MRI, they're purchasing the ultrasound, except they're not purchasing who's actually going to read those images when they're produced. So that's where the radiologist comes in. So you will get a CT scan, you'll get an MRI scan, but it doesn't come with a radiologist who's actually going to interpret the images. So that's where we come in to try to bridge that gap of making sure specialists are interpreting the images correctly and serving the surgeons, the internal medicine doctors, the obstetricians, and so forth.
What do you think is the role of the diaspora medical expertise in terms of building and strengthening Africa's health system?
So I feel that the role of the African diaspora in helping to bridge these gaps in specialty care is really to provide training, but also to be a bridge, because many of us who maintain contacts with our native countries in Africa understand the local culture, understand the local politics and dynamics. And so we are able to use that knowledge to orient our counterparts who may not necessarily be from the continent. And so we serve that cultural ambassador role, but also we serve as advocates because of where we are. I don't think even if all of the African diaspora moved to Africa, that would necessarily solve the problem. So that is not really the issue, but there are many, many of our colleagues in America, North America, specifically United States and Canada, who are willing to go on these short trips to Tanzania or elsewhere on the continent to assist in this mission to train our physicians on the continent. And again, it's really exciting because from a sustainability perspective, we already see that as you train our local physicians in the local environment, one, our trainers now, they become their own specialists, but also our patients benefit directly from that service. So I think there's a big role for the diaspora to play. And I think I can't emphasize that we should take advantage that many of us who came as first generation are no longer, quote unquote, native Tanzanians. And many of us never feel that we will be fully American. So we kind of live in this in-between state, but that in-between state allows you to kind of be a bridge between the two cultures and hopefully benefit the populations are still on the continent.
To you, where are the urgencies in terms of improving the health system in general?
I would say lack of specialists by far is the most challenging. And I will go further to say that many countries do not even have a training program. So many times you'll hear that, you know, the problem is brain drain. The problem is lack of, you know, people staying on the continent. But I really feel the major lack is actually lack of training programs because I believe there's no shortage of trainees. So we have to work very hard to produce and create those opportunities on the continent, because really the alternative is to send them to the United States, to Canada, to Europe for training. And I'm a perfect example. It's highly unlikely that you're going to return to the continent after spending 10, 15 years getting your education. So I think one way to address both the shortage in specialists and also help to address the issue of brain drain is to create training opportunities on the ground. And in our experience, as you create training opportunities on the ground, the hospitals also tend to invest in those facilities as well, because they can actually see that our clinicians, as they're gaining more skills, they can actually use better equipment and so forth. And so that has been true for us for interventional radiology, neuroradiology, and now women's imaging. So I think if you're doing the work in the country, it tends to be more supported. And many times, if you go to train abroad and you come back 5 years later and you find the system is just as you left it, guess what? Now you have to like build the system from the ground. But if you're training within that environment, chances are you actually have to contend with all of the challenges. And usually there will be more investment as well.
Dr. Frank Minja, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. In Eswatini, Sweli Martin Dlamini has built a reputation for being a fearless exposer of corruption, shaking the nation's political landscape with his investigative reporting. From government offices to the pharmaceutical industry, Dlamini has uncovered scandal after scandal. But his most recent expose, which revealed a shocking drug shortage scandal implicating high-profile figures, may be his most explosive yet. Nokukunya Musi reports from Eswatini.
According to investigative journalist Zweli Martin Dlamini, popularly known as Zwemat, the alleged misappropriation of over 1 billion rand and over 51 million US dollars in public funds within the Ministry of Health and two other companies, Swazi Farm and Ava Farm, both owned by Karim Ashraf, Indonesian consul to Eswatini, has resulted in a widespread shortage of drugs in public hospitals. As a result, ordinary citizens like 44-year-old mother, wife, and epileptic patient Dudu Dlamini are left without vital medication.
I am epileptic and need medication. I didn't find what I was looking for. The nurses told me to pray because there may be a chance that my condition is getting better. I was here even last month and still received the same response. I was told to go to the pharmacy, only to find that even the pharmacists don't have the medication.
Dudu travels an hour long, 53 kilometers, 32.93 miles distance from her rural village in Singweni to the town of Manzini in search of a medicine that could save her life. Her plight and that of many more like her is Zweli Martin Dlamini's biggest motivation. With a team of five people, he claims to have uncovered evidence of corruption within the government. Zwemat's recent revelations have brought to light the involvement of over eight high-ranking government officials in addition to the Indonesian consul to Eswatini, whose bank accounts have been frozen, pending investigations and an ongoing court case. A forensic report singles out fraud, corruption, and conflict of interest as main factors for the continuous drug shortage in Eswatini, depriving patients of vital resources. The state has been taking legal action to bring these cases to trial. None of the accused have publicly commented on the charges brought against them. Fortunate Bembe, Deputy Director of Pharmaceutical in the Ministry of Health, is one of the accused, facing allegations of financial impropriety. It is unclear whether she and the co-accused will deny these accusations, and VOA's attempts to interview the accused have been unsuccessful as the case is still pending in court. Zwemate says that covering such crimes has made him a target.
Being a journalist, particularly being an investigative journalist, comes with the risk and challenges. As you might be aware, it has been widely reported about the Eswatini government, including the king, persecuting me merely for publishing critical articles. But of course, if you're a journalist and decide to stand against those who are powerful, you are likely to face such challenges.
Political activist Wandile Dludlu describes Zwemat's work as pivotal in exposing corruption and promoting transparency.
In our view, the work that this organization or media entity, as well as the editor, has been phenomenal. It's phenomenal in the sense that in a country like ours, where even parliament is unable to exercise its fundamental role of holding the executive accountable, in a country where there are a number of royal big business people, as well as the monarchy itself as a family, and together with its close business and political cabal, is above the law. Even in the constitution, it's written that they can't be held accountable. Their actions can never be subjected to any form of redress, whether by a court or any structure. It becomes a very hotbed for corruption, as well as malpractice that is prevalent in this 56-year-old post-British colonial political system.
Zwemat is currently living in exile in South Africa and vows to continue his fight against corruption.
What motivates me to continue doing my job is the fact that I am representing the voice of the people. The people must be well informed with regards to what is happening in their country so that they can, of course, make informed decisions and, of course, hold those in power accountable. Taking a stand against the Eswatini authorities was based on the principles of transparency and accountability.
Nokukhanya Musi, VOA News, Menzini, Eswatini.
Now to Bordeaux, France, where a surgeon soothes the patients she operates on by the unique sound of her voice that some patients find soothing.
The operating room with its pale lights contrasts with the warm and captivating voice of Aisha Ndoye, covering Whitney Houston. The French surgeon who soothes the patients she operates on leads a double life as a doctor and singer.
The first time I sang, I was still an intern. I was still a student. And I really sang in a moment of desperation when we couldn't get a patient to go to sleep because she was totally agitated and wouldn't let herself be perfused. And so I was washing my hands and I thought, maybe I try something. The last option we had was for me to sing. Well, I sang to the patient, which kind of captured her attention, so I was able to infuse her at the same time and put her to sleep. And since then, I've made it an integral part of my work.
At 34, Ndoye, a gynecological surgeon specializing in oncology, released her first album with two other colleagues. The trio, Les Soignantes, reached the semi-final of France Has Incredible Talent.
There's a purpose behind it. It's not just singing. It's not a concert. For me, it's therapeutic, and they understand that. And they're now all very, very happy to see me sing.
Lucie Deneau, an operating theater nurse, says a person who sleeps peacefully wakes up more gently, and the body requires less anesthesia.
It's relaxing, but it's not only relaxing for the patients. It's also relaxing for the general atmosphere in operating theater. It's not just the music you can hear. It's really the voice of a surgeon with her patients. And it's very powerful in human terms. It even moves us to tears at times.
Almost 500,000 Ukrainian immigrants have moved to the U.S. since the start of Russia's invasion, according to the Department of Homeland Security. Two of the biggest challenges they face are finding health care and a job. In one small Colorado city, a local clinic owner, herself a Ukrainian immigrant, is helping out as much as she can. Svetlana Pristinka has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Liana Marienko came to Denver, Colorado in the fall of 2022. In her native town of Vinnytsia, she was working in diagnostics medicine. In Colorado, Marienko found a similar job from the owner of a local clinic.
One morning she called me, said she knew I had a medical degree and told me she had a job at the clinic for me.
That she is Eli Titarenko, who came to the U.S. from Ukraine over two decades ago.
It was really important for me to help people who only just came here from Ukraine, who may not be able to speak English very fluently yet.
In 2021, Alena, or Eli Titarenko, opened Arvada West Family Medicine Clinic in Arvada, Colorado, northwest of Denver. Every month, the clinic sees some 500 patients. About 80% of them are Ukrainian.
When we arrived, we had problems with insurance and a language barrier. Ellie helped us a lot. She told us what to do.
I had problems with blood pressure in Ukraine, and Elena helped me normalize that, and then got me my medicine.
Many Ukrainians in need of psychological help in their native language also come to the clinic, says nurse Halina Kandyuk.
Many are from Ukraine's east, Donetsk, Kharkiv, Luhansk regions. It is very difficult when these patients come because they all come with trauma.
It breaks my heart that war alters human psychology to the point where they stop valuing what should be most precious, their life. In the last 2 years, we've seen so many patients with suicidal thoughts.
Titarenko says most patients don't speak English, and to determine their psychological state, tests and surveys are translated into Ukrainian.
We teach patients how to live one day at a time, because worrying about the future brings anxiety. Worrying about the past often leads to depression.
Today, 7 out of 10 staff at the clinic are Ukrainians, and many more are interning at the clinic.
If you have received medical education, do not discard your diplomas. I hope everyone who has medical training will find a way to work here.
In the future, Titarenko hopes to open another clinic in Colorado and employ more Ukrainian professionals there. For Svetlana Pristinska in Denver, Colorado, NRI's VOA News.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou in Washington, with producer Mukbelia Barrow. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.